He's kind of like the Joe Rogan of the hospitality industry right now.
Where in the EV world right now, there's so many cars coming aboard. There's so much opportunity. I think I still would have been okay in the vacation industry, but not in multifamily and not in hospitality, say the hotel side. I needed what they had already accomplished at that point to accomplish what I was envisioning. And fortunately, majority of our vision was aligned. And pretty good guys, too. I'm sure you're like me. You got to have integrity first. If that's not there, then forget it.
You're listening to Slick Talk, the hospitality podcast, a podcast for those who are in and around the hospitality industry who love, live, and breathe what they do. You can join us for candid and unscripted conversations with hospitality experts and founders as we go deeper into their personal stories while they're sharing their triumphs and trials that got them to where they are today. I'm your host, Will Slickers, and you're listening to an episode of Slick Talk, the hospitality podcast. Now, let's begin. What's up, Slick Talkers? Welcome back to another episode, and as usual, but with a little bit of a twist, I want to say one thing before we jump in, and that is, one, Merry Christmas, and I hope you all had a good time with your family, and two is Happy New Year. I can't wait to see what's in store for 2023 with myself, the businesses, and of course, the podcast, but also with what's going on in your lives. I've gotten to know so many of you over the last 2 years, and it's just been super incredible to really connect and form a community around the show. So thank you. And speaking of 2 years, is officially December 27th, the day after publishing this episode, been 2 years since I quit my day job as a hotel manager to take on the podcast and my vacation rental management company full time. So holy cow, what a 2 years it's been. But I couldn't be more thankful for everything you guys have done to get me to this point. From a podcast to two podcasts, now a network of podcasts, has been an incredible, incredible 2 years. Another group of people that have really made this 2 years possible have been our podcast sponsors. And if you listen to the show once before, you've heard their name once or twice, if not multiple times. And so a big shout out and thank you to Hostfully, who has been with me for pretty much the full 2 years, for really believing in the message and the podcast in itself and in me. And then we added Safely not too long after that, and Minute this year. These three have really made the podcast amazingly possible, and I couldn't be more thankful to these companies because not only do I use them in my property management company, but I've actually gotten to know the teams behind the scene and just know they're incredible people. So check out all the special offers in the show notes below, and let's get back to the episode with Eric Broughton from OK to Charge. All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of Slick Talk, the hospitality podcast. And I am brought to you by a legend today because Eric Broughton, who is the CEO of OK to Charge, has joined me. And Eric, my man, I'm so excited to have you on the show because we connected pretty quickly in Vegas. And thankfully to Lino and to Travis Wilburn for making that introduction. But just want to say welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much. Any intro from those two guys, we're probably likely to become quick friends. So absolutely.
Yeah, no, it was awesome. And they were definitely hyping you up, but the hype does not disappoint because getting to chat with you and hear more about your background and to read more about you and what you've done in the past is pretty impressive. And I want to dive into your story today for all the listeners, because obviously we'll touch on OK to Charge and what you guys are doing for the vacation rental industry right now. But I think your pathway here is super important, and it showcases like the entrepreneurial spirit that everyone in this industry has. And so I'll let you kick it off. Like, where does this all begin for you in your professional career? I have tons of questions for you, so I'll let you kind of start off the introduction and then kind of ease into it there.
Yeah, right. So first off, yep, Eric Broughton, CEO of OK to Charge, EV charging platform. We don't have to talk about that too much, but yeah, as far as my background, I mean, it probably goes back all the way to me living on a farm growing up, and it was just get work done. I was on a panel a couple of weeks ago, and so, well, how do you know, when you're stuck in a situation, how do you just push through? And it's kind of one of those epiphanies. I thought, well, I grew up in this farm and I have to do this job. And my dad says, do this work, clean out this pen. you know, shovel this manure and do all this work. And there's no one to turn to and go and complain or cry or anything else. You just got to get that work done before you can come in the house and have dinner and hang out and watch Dukes of Hazzard or something, you know. So you have to get after it. And I think that's just been a mindset ever since I've been a small, you know, probably 5, 6, 7, 8 years old. Just get after it, take care of things that need to be taken care of, and then you can have some fun. And that's kind of the way I look at things.
I love it. And you know, I don't tell this story often, but that was actually not one of my first jobs. My first job was Little Caesars. I was a sign flipper on the side of the street. Like, nice. I would be dancing along with my sign. It was fun. You just put on some Michael Jackson or whatever and you just pop out. One of my first jobs, like before, like I got into my adult life, was I was making $100 a week shoveling horse crap out of horse stalls. I get that struggle of like, all right, there's no one else here to do it. You just got to get it done.
That's the thing.
So, yeah. I love it. So how does that apply to your life getting into your career? Cause you have an extensive career, getting multiple companies from startup mode to IPO to your last position before taking over this OK2Charge. You were with Inhabit IQ. So kind of walk us through the beginning phases of your career, kind of leading up to today.
Yeah, it was, I'm an electrical engineer by schooling, one of these degrees say that. And then went to work in a steel mill in Kingman, Arizona. And it's always about I've always chosen the path of kind of most entrepreneurial, the latest and greatest technology. So I had the opportunity to go work for Boeing or for, you know, Northrop Grumman or for some of these large chip, IBM or different companies, electrical engineer. But I chose a steel mill because it was the first steel mill built in the United States in about 20 years. And it was built in 1995 and it had all this great technology. So I went in there as a plant engineer and really helping them manage different processes. In about 3 months, I became a shift manager. I'm managing, you know, these grisly 50-year-old, you know, steel workers, and I'm this 25-year-old kid. Fortunately, I just got them playing football, so I was in pretty good shape, so I can go around toe-to-toe with them. But then I got the work done, and I was able to figure out how to work with their IT systems to reduce their changeover from about 15 minutes from switching from rebar to rebar to about 3 minutes by using software systems. Like, this is great. Dang. Yeah, it saved the company a ton of money. And they said, well, do you want to run the IT department? I thought, well, that sounds a lot better than, you know, getting steel dust in my face, you know, wearing gloves and everything. So I get to sit in the desk all day. So I started writing code. And I became really an intrapreneur first, I think, which is an important thing for a lot of people to think about. And I want to mentor.
Can you explain that a little bit, or what that is, what an intrapreneur is instead of an entrepreneur?
Yeah. It's being an employee of a company and taking a step back and saying, you know, what can I do that's going to influence this business in a positive way? But first, you have to understand how the business makes money, where the opportunities are, and you have to do it within the confines of the business. You just can't wake up and say, I'm going to do a new business line. And what I was able to do is network within, it was Cargill Steel. The company is Northstar Steel, but this big, it was the largest private company in the world at the time. And they also had an energy trading division, met some guys. And when I was running the IT systems, I learned that, Enron was a big issue. This is the late 98, 99. And figured out that when our electric arc furnace plant went down, we basically had lightning in a bottle. So we're melting steel, really scrap metal down. And you have about 25,000 homes using this much electricity in Arizona. And I figured out whenever the mill went down, we could sell that electricity. So I would send a note to Cargo Corporate to sell the electricity in the open market. We made more money selling electricity than making steel in a couple months. And that's where, you know, I was like, wow, you know, got some write-ups in these magazines and things. That was pretty exciting. But that's kind of stuck at, hey, I can create some meaningful value here by just thinking outside the box.
Well, I want to ask you a question then, because there was this podcast. I don't think it's still around today, but I used to listen to it. It's called Born or Made. And I want to know, do you feel like entrepreneurs are born the way they are and naturally born entrepreneurial? Or are they made through something like going through an experience at a job where it's like you see a gap in your business that you're already being employed by to then kind of fulfill that? Do you feel like you were born or made to do it?
I was probably in consulting too long, so I'm going to say it varies. There's a matrix of born and made. I'm going to say you can be born an entrepreneur because you're a born competitor and you want to win and you don't like anyone else managing you and bossing you around. That's like a born entrepreneur. And there's the made entrepreneur. And I put myself more in the made camp, in that you're born a certain way, but as you look around, you say, I want that, or I can achieve that. And then you're one thing I am is constantly curious. And I would say that I was born curious, but I've become an entrepreneur. I could have easily become a scientist or an engineer and stuck in that field. But an entrepreneur, you're more made because you keep on seeing different things and you grasp onto them.
No, I love that. And it's really interesting because I have some people that, you know, they completely say like, oh, I was made to be an entrepreneur. Like, this was what I was born to do. I was born to be an entrepreneur. Like, this was my life from the get-go. I was 7 years old selling candy at my school, like, you know, like whatever. And then like some people are like, kind of like you, like, you know, I had a traditional path, whether it was college and developing a career or whatever, just had, and also had that instilled like work ethic in the beginning. When you're shoveling horse manure or cow manure or whatever, like, that's kind of, that kind of gets instilled into you. And then you see like this gap and opportunity where it's like, I think the curiosity, like you just said, is really important because I think when you stop becoming curious as a business owner or leader, that's kind of when it starts to kind of fade out and go away. But
And your exposure as well. What are you exposed to? Myself growing up, I thought the most important person in the world, and you know, my world, I grew up in South Dakota, the plant manager. Boy, if you can be the plant manager, you have just reached the pinnacle. You know, that was the guy, the one Mercedes in town that was driving around. That's what that guy had, you know. So that was, and then I get off to college and I see another world. And then I moved to Arizona. And then I was recruited to Chicago to be an Oracle consultant. So I was working in Oracle technology, moved to Chicago. And then my world just blew apart even more because I was able to see all these different, you know, I mean, heck, you're working in the Sears Tower or you're working, you know, at One Magnificent Mile, then your brain changes. And probably a really big project that I had, I was a data architect for Northern Trust. And that's the wealth management division is very large within Northern Trust. So I was actually designing data systems for like the Bush family, Wayne Gretzky, Jamie Foxx, people like that. And it was fascinating to see how wealth was transferred. And I was still pretty young at the time, probably my late 20s. But to see that how some people made more money than I made in a year by sweeping their accounts overnight and making interest. You know, that's quite a thing to happen.
I was gonna say that's like a whole nother episode for a podcast, I think. That's insane though. Like, what did that do for you? Did that change? Like, did you the next day just completely be like, all right, I'm no longer gonna accept like this paycheck type of income? I'm gonna start trying to figure out other ways to make money,
there's a little bit of that. I mean, it's it wasn't quite being a five-year-old at a Major League Baseball game and I'm going to be a baseball player. You know, like it wasn't quite like that. Yeah. Like, hey, I'm going to be George Bush someday or Wayne Gretzky or one of these, you know, ultra wealthy people. But it taught me to think a little bit differently about how money is used. I mean, there was trying to build a data structure that supports artwork next to a 401, not even 401k there, but past that, but like large mutual funds to investments, to horses, to cars, to land. You know, and you try to build all that. So I was almost in the technology side and a little bit of that. But one thing it really helped me to do is based on that background, I was able to get my next project with Archipelago. And that was a brilliant group in Chicago that bought the Pacific Stock Exchange. So if you remember that movie that Will Smith was in, what was it called? The Pursuit of Happiness. So he's sitting on the steps of the Pacific Stock Exchange. That's now shut down. This group in Chicago bought it. And then what they did is they took it all virtual. And that was one of the first virtual stock exchanges. So I was able to lead some projects there for them. And they were eventually acquired by the New York Stock Exchange. So I was able to work with Steve Rubinow, the CIO, who became the CIO of New York Stock Exchange. Just all the transactions and all that was pretty exciting. And it's all about these different opportunities that kind of help you level up. And while I was doing that, I also became president of Chicago's Oracle User Group. So I was working with that group, leading that. I even had a meeting at the Sears Tower. So that was kind of a, hey, take a, you know, this may have been before selfies. Hey, mom, look at me. I'm at the Sears Tower. I'm leading a meeting. You know, that's pretty cool. Yeah, sixth floor. What are you feeling this way? So that was pretty fun. But that's where I actually met a gentleman that was with Amley Residential, AMLI, who was just bought by Morgan Stanley Real Estate for $2.5 billion. So Amley was bought by Morgan Stanley. And he was in the meeting and he said, in my Oracle User Group meeting, and he, hey, Eric, you know, we just got acquired. Morgan Stanley wants to use our technology and apply it across their $100 billion assets under management. Would you like to be one of the leaders of the team? So I joined as the president and COO. It's really like a consultative team. And it was kind of an entrepreneur once again. So we were being consultants within their portfolio projects. And that was my first foray into real estate. So that was, I guess my point of that story is it's really just these separate incidents that helped me level up, but it was a lot of it was just me raising my hand. You know, no one said, hey, here's a job opening for president of Chicago Oracle User Group. It was, I went to a couple of meetings. I gave a couple of presentations and the guy pulled me aside and said, hey, you know, I'm getting pretty old. I'm getting tired of this. Do you want to lead it? You know, so I was like the vice president for a year and then I took it over and that was, that gave me the opportunity for the next role.
Well, that was a perfect segue of my, cause my question for you is going to be, how the hell did you get into real estate in this world of short-term rentals? But that answered it perfectly. So what was the biggest learning and takeaway in that position? Kind of being an entrepreneur again, did you, question for that, I guess, did you recognize that you were an entrepreneur at the time, or did you just see this as a really good opportunity to continue to grow into your professional career and kind of like as another milestone? And then what was the biggest learning away from that as you were in that position through the time that you were there?
Right. No, great question. I learned that I was still an entrepreneur because I was still risk averse. I had three young children at the time, you know, three daughters, as I mentioned, they're all in college right now. So that's a different problem to have. But at the time I had three young daughters. So I was very risk averse. Maybe one was on the way, you know, that type of thing. And I grew up from meager background, so I didn't have the family. Oh, hey, Dad, could I borrow $1 million to start this business? It wasn't like, or even 10,000. It wasn't like that. So it was kind of more conservative financially, a mindset. So I was still the entrepreneur. So that was a huge opportunity to be able to build a consulting group from the ground up. And that's where it was really helpful because I had to look at financials, you know, even setting up QuickBooks for the small group. Mm-hmm. Even though we were within Morgan Stanley Real Estate, we had to go and eat what we kill. You know, we had a pitch to Safeguard Self-Storage became a client, a couple more, all within Morgan Stanley's portfolio. And we were deploying these large ERPs and different things. But another big thing that it taught me is even a big company like Morgan Stanley can get, can be in financial trouble. And this was right around 2006 when I started, or 2007. So then 2008 comes, financial crisis. You know, everything's whirling down and they shut us down. Basically I had to release most of my team members. They did change our charter so we could sell externally, but that's when I switched from being an entrepreneur to an entrepreneur. And that's, that was the big change is, I had to go out and hustle. And, I went back to what I knew, which is I landed a big Oracle contract with the Port of Oakland. So there's seaport, airport, and commercial real estate. So I got that project, I had about $10 million in revenue for that project, but then started doing what I thought would be taken off, which was data warehousing, which I knew in real estate. So multifamily, did these other projects like Safeguard doing ERP, but I thought, and I called it Yield Vision. I'm going to build software as a service, data warehouse can be awesome. And software as a service was big for me because Mark Benioff, who everyone knows now as CEO of Salesforce, was kind of new back then, and he gave a seminar in Chicago. There's only about 50 of us in the room. So I had like a one-on-one listening to Mark Benioff. Yeah. I'm like,
that's crazy.
That's the way, you know, recurring revenue, hit it. Cause I've been doing all these consulting projects and took some of this, database administration, system administration, kind of fractional usage of something and apply this to software. I said, wow, there's something here. So the first thing I tried to do is create software as a service with data warehousing. The problem was I was asking these real estate companies to spend $250,000 to set up a data warehouse. they'd say, no way, we're not spending that. Because if you're in real estate, 250 grand or 100 grand, I'll put that in real estate. And then, you know, a couple of years later, and then the rule of that 20X, they're going to get so much more money on the profit there. So they just didn't want to. Mm-hmm. So I had about three clients there, shut that down. But then I also saw what was the first thing to come out of the recession, or that recession at the time, financial crisis, was going to be apartments. And that's where people were moving into apartments. Now it's kind of normal, but it was still not as normal. Everyone still had the white picket fence and the two-car garage. That was still the American dream. Apartments were kind of coming up. So put more money in that. And I found out the biggest spot with little visibility was marketing. They were writing $1,000, $2,000 checks per multifamily property to apartments.com and rent.com and not knowing why or if it's working or not. So we started to track every email, every phone call, every click through. And that was Rent Sentinel is what that was called. And believe it or not, we found out that the most cost effective site, even for Class A properties, was Craigslist. It was insane.
Wow. Out of all the sites, Craigslist took off.
Yeah, exactly. And we were helping places in New York City. They were getting $5,000 a month for an apartment, which is a lot at the time. Now it's pretty low, but they were.
Yeah.
Somebody found on Craigslist for $5,000 a month. Yeah. You know, and we'd put catchy headlines, you know, find this, put in some pop songs or something, you know, get this apartment with the boots with the fur, you know, whatever it is, just, you know, just have fun with it. And then we did some cool things. We had a group of about 20 stay-at-home military spouses that would write up content for us and do different things and grab pictures. So it was a really fun project. And then that was my first exit. Sold that company to RealPage, which is based out of Dallas, Texas.
Yeah, and RealPage, I think, is not maybe as popular in the short-term rental world, but they have their mentions, right? They have Mego, and they've done some. Right. They sold Kigo. Well, yeah, they sold Kigo now to Guesty, right? I think Guesty bought
That's
it.
That's right.
So. Yeah. So
they kept Mego.
Yeah, they keep their name. You know, mentioned throughout the year or so every now and then, but
sold the Thoma Bravo for $10 billion. Just a nice little check there. Yeah.
Yeah. Seriously.
Jeez. Yeah.
So your first exit to RealPage, what did that do for you personally? Like, I guess not like on a financial mean, I know there's obviously the financial upside of an exit, but from just mindset to personal like growth, what was the biggest feeling you had? Did you have like a sense of like relief afterwards, or did you feel like you just had to hit the ground running on another project? What kind of happened in the next phase after that?
It was the latter. I hit the ground running, and it wasn't exactly the next project. The next thing was I still hadn't shaken that entrepreneur mindset. I still felt like, hey, I had to compete. And So I came on to RealPage as a leader of a small group initially. And then within the first 2 years, I became president of the marketing division. So I took Rent Sentinel and about five other companies that they had acquired and merged that and made it more productive as a division called LeaseStar. So it was other marketing platforms and built some other components. And I've always wanted to innovate, or I always need to innovate. So I kept on creating new concepts and products, which doesn't always play well in very large corporations, you know, especially an acquisitive one. So I would really, it's like, what is that? BASF. They say we take great products and make them better. You know, that's basically what I had to end up doing, and said, okay, I shouldn't innovate as much. Instead, I should take the acquisitions they spent tens of millions of dollars on and make them slightly better, you know, make a better client experience. So that's really what I focused on.
And how long did you do that before you ended up going to do your next entrepreneurial
journey? Yeah, so that was about 2 years. And then I was recruited away by a group in San Antonio. So there was Red McCombs put some money into a fund. And there's a couple of their gentlemen that were mostly in the automotive industry. And they had dipped their toe into the real estate side. And that was that group purchasing. But it was really more of, it's called eSupply Systems. They wanted a CEO. And I was always thought that, Red McCombs, who's the namesake for the business school at University of Texas, just brilliant guy. So the chance to work with his team was really exciting, and joined them. And I still lived in Chicago, so I kept on traveling back and forth. But the it was a platform that, think of like Amazon.com, but for a single apartment building. You're buying your refrigerators and your coffee machines over your, you know, over your shoulder, and carpeting and then paint and everything else. And you restrict that for your maintenance tech. So it's an easy button. And then just over and over and over again, and create some major savings. And, but there was a lot of fundamental issues with that company when I came in, as far as the structure. And so, unfortunately, I had to turn over about 70% of the staff. Because that's another theme. I've always made sure I'm always surrounded by really great people that are really, really excited to move forward. So I was able to get the team aligned, made some lifelong friends there, and made it a profitable entity. But the growth trajectory wasn't there. So I exited that to RealPage as well. Got the investors. It was to the point where they might lose everything. So I was able to get it turned around to get them their money back and then some. And that's, you know, a good way to make friends is to save them from losing lots of money.
I was going to say, at the end of the day, they're probably super thankful that you came in and did that, because, there's nothing I can only imagine attending all these board meetings and be like, man, this company, like, I want to believe in it, I invested in it, but man, it's not really doing its thing. Like,
exactly. And me, as a, how I communicate, especially even to a board, most especially to a board, I do not pull any punches. I'm always lay it all out. I don't need to sell them on anything. I'm just, this is what it is. That's what I believe. And then, bring them the problem, but also tell them, here's what I'm going to do, the solution. And they're really responsive to that, which really helped.
That's awesome.
Probably another reason is I had this concept, and it was the vacation industry, short-term rentals. This is kind of my foray into that. I was at these conferences with my platform, eSupply Systems, and I heard this gentleman, his name is Jaja Jackson with Airbnb. Have you ever met Jaja?
Yeah. I've never met, I've heard his name mentioned a couple times. So
just a definitely great guy, Harvard educated, a brilliant, brilliant individual, but he's at these, multifamily conferences talking about Airbnb. And he's effusive about it. He's so excited. Hey, isn't it awesome that Airbnb just had an announcement this last week about they're back at it. But this was 7-8 years ago. He said, isn't it great that your residents are able to list their apartments on Airbnb? Isn't that awesome? And they're all saying, no, that's terrible. Like, what are you thinking? Number one, we get no money out of this. Number two, we don't know who's coming and going. Number three, the liability is still on us, and our residents are making money that they're violating their leases, all these bad things. And it just didn't play well. So he was ostracized, and I watched that happen. And I thought, there's a better way to do this. So I interviewed a bunch of execs after I exited eSupply Systems and talked, well, what do you want? What would be
good? Yeah.
And basically it's, well, we need better occupancy. It's, better, just like anywhere else. They had vacant units. And I said, okay, we'll put some furniture in there, work with the court furniture. What else do you need? Oh, we need to make sure that we don't have, bad actors in there. All right, I'll do background checks. So the partnership with TransUnion, did background checks. We don't need to do finance because they pay up front. And they said, what if somebody lights a candle and it burns my apartment down, a building, it's 200 units. And I said, okay, I'll get insurance. So I partnered with Assurant, put together an insurance package. I hadn't met like Rental Guardian or Brady and the crew yet or any of that. So I didn't even know it exists. So did that. And I started to build the platform up. That became Apartment Jet. And what we didn't know is we built really a rudimentary property management system really quickly. And, I remember I was at a corporate housing event, and I saw the flyer for Streamline, and I said, oh my God, why did we build this? I could have just used this thing, but instead we built it from scratch. But we built it in about 6 months. We just cranked it out and syndicate to Vrbo and Airbnb. And it was pretty fun.
Well, dang, like I have so many, there's so many directions.
Yeah, ask anything. Yeah. I won't violate my agreements, but I'll tell you.
No. But man, that's super impressive. And I just think, I see like the combination of the entrepreneur / entrepreneur, like as you're talking, just like seeing like, all right, Jaja Jackson, like getting ostracized in this multifamily event. And then you're like, well, no, it's a good idea. He's just kind of maybe coming at it the wrong way, or not thinking about like who his audience is and what their concerns are. But at the end of the day, like it's still, and like, you said, we talked about it this week on Good Morning Hospitality, but was like, mm-hmm. okay, the apartment spot with Airbnb, it sounds like Nido yeah. all over again, which was a yeah. huge failure of a disaster project for them.
Yeah. For did you know involved. That so Apartment Jet actually was the system behind Nido?
Oh, really? I did not yeah. know that.
Yeah,
I did absolutely. Not know that.
So the platform my team built, we were the back end for Nido because no one else had anything like it. Because we had yeah. the apartment industry. Yeah. Yep. So we were powering it. And the concept, you know, there's many reasons that you can read and you yeah. know, legal and yeah. otherwise, but we were on the plus side of that. But there's so many things now that are in better shape, such as access control is a big thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, latch was part of it, was a big issue if you didn't have that integration. Yep. But we had it dialed in, you know, we were able to support them. And then the big thing is the syndication. But with Nido, they would only syndicate to Airbnb because there was so much yep. funding from Airbnb. Yep. And that's, you know, as we know in our industry in vacation, you know, is that what's that 40%, maybe 50% of your list bookings? How mm-hmm. well are you doing if you're only going with 50%? So, you know, among many other items.
Yeah. yeah. Well, I met a lot of Nido hosts, like the tenants that lived there / that had, and man, they're hustlers, but they had no, it wasn't the technology or the, it wasn't that issue. It was the issue of lack of support. Like they were just like, hey, we literally are cleaning 5 apartments in one day and we're getting our rents are going above than we ever make. Like we make no money now and we're just cleaning right. for free. Like,
correct.
That's it. Yeah. And it just became something that was so, yeah, out of hand. So, but outside of that, back to you in apartment. Yeah,
no, it's fine. Yeah, it's a fascinating topic. Like, there's been a lot of conversation coming my way last week, as you can imagine. Well,
I can imagine a lot. So with Apartment Jet, you guys build this infrastructure. You again come in solving a problem with a proper solution. All right, yep. what do you need? Furniture? Great. What do you need after that? Technology? Great. We could do that. Mm-hmm. What do you need? Like just hitting all the check boxes that you can.
Yep.
Now, operations are happening. You guys are cranking. Tell us about the acquisition from Expedia Group. So Expedia comes in and right. They came in yes. after how long after you guys were running this business?
18 months.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It was so Jeez. Fast. Yeah. It was so fast. We were cranking up. And initially they came in as, wow, you guys are doing some great things. Let's talk about how we can improve the processes mm-hmm. there. Mainly because once we set up our Vrbo integration, they would see these ADRs that were 180, 200% higher than what they're normally getting. We were getting $250 a night because we're in Austin, yeah. we're in Nashville, we're in Chicago. And they're yeah. saying, wow, look at this. How do we get more of this? You know, and urban core was really the kind of the hot thing. So they kept on looking at that data. And they said, wow, look at it. And then what happens to most groups is, especially when you have your financial analysts going, what's the total addressable market? Well, in the apartment mm-hmm. industry, it's 20 million units in the United States. So mm-hmm. people can do pretty quick math and go, oh my God, look how much opportunity is there. Yeah. So they took a look at us and, you know, we were pretty small at the time, obviously. And we were thinking about a fundraise. And when someone comes along and offers you a buyout number that's probably about 2x of what you even thought your next fundraise, you know, exit was, or, you know, valuation was going to be, you got to take yeah. it, you know, for the investors. So we were able to get one of my, you know, you get a lot of Christmas cards, which is good, but I was able to get, you know, a lot of our investors in a little over a year, 3.5x return on their money, jeez. Which is unheard of.
Yeah. It's insane to think about, like, especially leading up to it, like, there's so yeah. many cool stories that you've gotten to experience and hit on. So I think you took a little bit of a break, right? After Apartment Jet?
A little
before
bit.
Getting into a little,
yeah,
a little,
well, first,
little break,
first
like maybe a couple of weeks.
Yeah. Yeah. A couple of weeks. Exactly. Well, first I went right into when Expedia Group acquired us, then yeah. I was able to manage, I still had, I don't know. I'm always a guy. I always got something to prove. I don't know until it's like someday be president of the United States, be like, it's not good enough, you know, whatever.
It's not good.
Got to work harder. Why am I not Elon Musk? But a good way, you know, so always have a chip on my shoulder. But Expedia Group managed Apartment Jet, but also they acquired a group called Pillow at the same time, which is more focused on that resident yeah. side. So I managed both those groups and created actually a branded division called Expedia Group Multifamily Solutions. So we're trying to bring that whole course. That was pretty fun, creating a whole division with Expedia. And then the pandemic hit. Yeah. And even that, we fought to the bitter end to keep a we pivoted our product. We created, what would we call it? Flex, maybe it was Alert or something. We created a flexible housing for first responders, Flex First. So it was like first, because you needed nurses and ambulance drivers and first responders in New York City. So we were trying to pivot that, but it was just too late for everything. So new CEO came in, shut things down. So yeah, you're right. I took about a week or two off. And I'd been pinged by it, and I talked to Inhabit IQ while I was at Expedia Group about a leadership role, and timing wasn't right. They were working on investment. And then, so I took a little bit more time, and I was looking at different entrepreneurial things, you know, on my whiteboard, at home in my office, like, this is a cool concept, and a bunch of other conversations that I had going on. But, Inhabit just seemed so enticing to me. Because it had the residential side, which I'd spent a lot of my career, and it had the vacation side, which is fascinating. You know, the roll up of Streamline and Live Res and Blue Tent and all these great groups. I thought, wow, this is great. And the plan was that I would come on board as this chief strategy officer. It's funny, I've already forgot. So I came on in that role. But the plan was take over manage the vacation division with Scott. And he was great. Or he is great. And then take over the residential, bring in some leadership there, and then build up, take over the whole company as CEO and take it public. And then, so get in the door, get vacation. And that was fun because, as you know, those are some great companies, great people. Meet like Scott Leggett and like Carlos and all the different, Amber and all these great people in these different groups. And Scott was outstanding and get involved in Verma and start writing some checks, getting part of it. We built that right to rent program, which really, really proud of that with the team, a simple solution that's going to give back. And then started to group, but it just wasn't what I expected it to be. So it was kind of, this is not a fit for me as well.
Yeah.
But on my whiteboard, I still had one of those three things was actually EV charging. It was at that. So I was at an event. It was a conference, and I met these guys, Lino, like you mentioned. And I had met Lino through different things at different events as well. Good guy. And I think Steve Schwab introduced us, so he's going to take ownership for that.
And he'll probably be watching. He'll comment on the live stream and say, "Yep, that's damn right. Damn right, I made that."
He probably will. He deserves every bit of it. Yeah, he actually, it's a good story. So we're at Darm in South Carolina, and Steve says, "Hey Eric, let's talk about Streamline. I'm a big client. Let's talk about some things." And I'm, as the leader of all these groups, so I'll meet with one of our largest clients, and he's just a great guy. So we're chatting, and he's like, let's meet at the Starbucks. It was it's right in the hotel there. We're sitting there, and let me introduce to these couple guys. And he introduced me to Lino, and Lino's, very, very, connects with you right away. You guys should connect and have a, so Steve totally planned it all. Him and Lino had it all choreographed, and it's like, okay, all right, I see what's going on. I didn't know what was going on, but he told me later on.
Yeah. He's like, coincidentally, this other guy is here as well. You guys should talk. Weird. Yeah,
exactly.
Well, such a great story. And I'm literally, as you were telling me the story of like Inhabit, I think I had a little bit of a flashback. Were you on stage at the Live Res conference last year in Boise? Yeah, I remember we shook hands. I was the MC,
and that's right.
you came up, and then as you were leaving, like, we shook hands, you passed me the little clicker, and off I we did. Went. I can't now it like so Vegas wasn't the first time that we met.
That wow, that is crazy. Yeah, and if you insane. Remember, I gave Amber the worst high five ever as I walked by, because she was coming up the steps and I was going down, and we were like, I don't know. It was so bad.
Yeah.
But I do remember that. It's awesome.
Yeah. I do remember Jessica Singer. Her and I were on the side of the stage. I was like, was kind of letting Amber introduce you and have you come up and all that. And she was like, Jessica was like, you got to meet Eric. He's like super big at Inhabit IQ. And like, wasn't unfamiliar with Inhabit, but I wasn't like, oh yeah, I totally know what who these people are. Like, no offense. I was like, I have no idea who Eric is, but I was just like, okay. And Jessica was like, no, you need to. And then it was more like, okay, well, I'm emceeing. I don't know what I'm really doing. I'm just going to like go do my job. And
you
like,
were the big deal there.
No, not even close. But then I was just like, okay, now, so as you're telling me the story, I can't believe that was actually the first time we met. So this is crazy. Cool. It's like full circle. But okay, so you, so Steve Schwab, Lino, they do this handoff basically like, hey, meet with us. We're a big client. And then, and really you got blindsided and got Lino switched in with Steve and all this stuff. So I guess, tell me, actually, I have a question before this, before we go. Yeah. I remember. What does your wife and your daughters think when they see this crazy whiteboard of all these ideas and like just kind of seeing you like go from, and it's not like it's a lot of time, but a couple of years and you're doing one thing and then you sell and you exit and you have like all these success pile ups, right? Yeah. So from like a personal standpoint, like what goes on with the family? Like, do they fully grasp like, holy crap, my dad's kind of a beast, or do they just kind of like, yeah, it's just typical dad just doing his thing.
That's hilarious. Like, yeah, it's a great question. As anybody with children knows, children are always grounding. You know, my daughters are not. Oh my goodness, Dad! Look how amazing you are. It's usually like, really, oh, I saw you on. You know, hey, you were on Fox News, and you're, you know, are not Fox Business. I was on there. They're like, your hair looked terrible, Dad. Like, what's wrong with you? You know, like I get things like that. You know, I was like, really, you're speaking that again. You know, but they love the whiteboard, and it's usually, you know, I'll write something up there, and then, you know, one of my daughters will interject like a bullet, you know, buy me a pony or something, you know. It's like, you know, now they're older, it's like, yeah, buy me a, you know, I won't say a bigger car or something, like, come on now.
Yeah,
buy me a Porsche. Yeah, they're funny about it, but now they're all at college, it's fun. And and I'm kind of a ham as well, so they'll have me on their TikTok or something, like, come on, Dad, and I'll something. So I kind of, I enjoy it. It's good times. They're good.
I was gonna say, I know we started following each other on Instagram today. Did I see that correctly? You were Geralt from the Witcher for Halloween. You were the Witcher. Okay, that was an epic costume. I was like, holy crap! This like this legendary CEO entrepreneur that I'm about to interview literally has a Witcher wig and costume on. It was great. It was great. It's good to see that there is personality. It's not all business at home.
Oh, you got to have fun. Otherwise, what's the point? You know? So I even got the big sword, the double handled sword. And everything. Yeah. I'm a total nerd, which fits my technology, you know, world. So no one looks down on you for that. It's good.
It does. Well, I'm kind of curious because, like, so my parents, I was never like introduced to entrepreneurial like people basically until I never really clicked until after I got out of basic training for the Army and stuff. And I think I was like 20, almost 21. And I was starting to see like Uber was the thing. That's when I started my first business. I started like a Uber chauffeur company. Using the platform, but also like creating my own like business funnel. Failed miserably, but never got introduced. Right. Like I never grew up watching my parents. You know, my mom has a massage. She's a massage therapist on her own company, but like she just to her, it's just work. Like she just does her thing. It's not like she's inventing or doing anything innovative. But for you as a dad and your kids growing up watching this, and now that they're fully aware adults, right? Like they're at college for different things and their own humans. How is that, like, do you see that impacting them in a positive way as an entrepreneur? Like they see like, okay, my dad can go do these things, then I can go do this. Or do you see like they just want a normal 9-to-5 type of career path where they're obviously can scale and grow and develop a business, but they just want to do their own thing? Do you see like any kind of difference from what you've done and what they've seen?
I do. I'll take a step back and talk about the parents first. My parents were both, you know, the hourly type workers. Yeah. My grandfather, both grandfathers were farmers. So I didn't realize at the time, but farmers are like the ultimate entrepreneur, right? You're doing your numbers, and now it's even more complicated. Do I hedge my corn bets, get my options and my futures and all these different things? So they really were entrepreneurs. They're living check to check, and if there's a storm, it's a rough time. And I was able to watch some of them build wealth over time by building up their land. I guess wealth is probably not the right term, but you sell this land when you retire, and that's your nest egg, you know? And I saw by watching my grandparents what they accomplished, then watching my parents what they accomplished by just working hourly, that was awakening for me. You know, I'll say my grandparents this much, my parents this much, you know, for hourly. You're not going to be happy with life based on that. So that was a good life lesson. My grandfather said something to me early on, and when I was little, he goes, "Well, Eric, if you want to get rich, you know, make money while you sleep." And that was just one of those, you know, he said a lot of other funny things that I can't repeat on this podcast, but you know, but hey, he was,
you never know.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. What's this rated? Yeah.
But we have a mature audience.
Yeah, there you go. True, true. Yeah. But it was, it's so true. If you're only making what you make while you are waking hours, you're not going to reach in, but that's fine too. And back to the question of my daughters, of my three girls, you know, one of them is very trying to be more socially, you know, she has the opportunity. Well, as I mentioned, she's at Berkeley Law right now. She graduates in May, and she's interviewing to do jobs that are, she's not going to make, you know, massive money and work for the big firms. She wants the support, and I'm really excited about it because she's telling about this. She had an internship this last summer with Consumer Finance Protection Bureau that Elizabeth Warren started. And she's telling me about, I don't violate anything, but there's some bad things happening across the world. And there's people like loaning money and they're keeping the money. And she's fighting the good fight by documenting that. And that's just so amazing to see that. So there's different value. Without my ability and what I've accomplished, she probably wouldn't have the opportunity to do that. And then my middle daughter, that's a special education major. She's what I love is she's entrepreneurial, even in how she's thinking about, she spent a summer with a special needs child and she was able to use an app on an iPad so we could communicate and use sign language to do these things. And she's thinking about that. How can I do this entrepreneurial? And then my youngest is cybersecurity. Yeah. And she's actually an employee of one of my LLCs called RR1 Ventures, where she has built the website and she's done all these cool things. And she's definitely entrepreneurial and thinks about how, you know, she was doing the shoe game for a while and getting the Nikes and buying for 100 and sell them for 350 or whatever. So she's done some of those type of things. So it's all different shades of it, which is pretty exciting to watch.
That's really cool. And the special needs part is really close to my heart. I have a twin brother who has Down syndrome. So I always love hearing, and he's very high functioning, but you know, just seeing like there's people that little heartstring is getting tugged on, wanting to create some useful tools and for that segment of like there, because there is business opportunities almost any way you look, shape or form.
Absolutely.
So it's really cool to see that and hear it. And that's gotta be exciting though for you to like, as a dad, like you create all this, you had a massive success. I'm sure there's some failure along the way. Like there's never a perfect, like
that's not line, on my LinkedIn. Right? The failures are not on LinkedIn yet.
Trust me. Neither is any of mine. They're all hidden in my closet over there. You know, just seeing like how that impacts and they become their own person from it. I think it's gotta be fulfilling, whether it's like, okay, she's going to be a lawyer. She's going from Berkeley, but she's not going to become a big firm lawyer. She's going to do something that like personally like fulfills her. Cause I think as entrepreneurs, one thing I think I've seen as a pattern is that we're all very self-aware of ourselves and kind of what's going on around the world with us. And finding like, I've seen so many entrepreneurs, like they'll start something. It's not something they're passionate about. And so automatically they're like, why am I doing this? Like, this is not fulfilling. It could be a great sale or it could be a great exit, but am I really happy with it? No. So like people will walk away from millions of dollars. So I can only imagine like how it is to see your daughters like chase something that's very personally like fulfilling in that way.
The best feeling.
It's really cool. Yeah. It's really cool.
Yeah. And now you're talking to my heartstrings because they're all going to be back for Christmas here in a couple weeks.
Yeah.
And you know, I'll pick up one and Thursday, and but they're all over the place. So it's just, it's going to be so much fun to have them all back home. I'm going to love it.
Yeah, for sure. That was so cool. I love it. Mm-hmm. Well, and so back to Lino and Steve Schwab kind of blindside and coming at you. Tell me about OK to Charge. What was this conversation like? Yeah. You were already kind of mentioned in Habit IQ. You're like, it's great, but it's not really my thing. So you're already kind of open to the idea probably of a new venture. So kind of walk us through it and kind of what you guys are doing at OK to Charge today.
Yeah, so I met them at met Lino and everything, but then I saw they had a charger in one of their Be Home 24/7 booths. And I just said, what are you guys doing with this thing? Oh, it's something we're working on the side. We've been working on it for a while, getting it dialed in. Said, well, I've been thinking about this. Tell me more. And the more we talked about it, the more I found out that they had done a lot of this legwork that I had just started, I knew I would have to do. So by partnering with them, it basically saved a year's worth of time. And in a way to look at it, it's probably, it'd be like me just getting up to speed of where I am now, it's basically a year from now. So I gained that much time, where in the EV world right now, there's so many cars coming aboard. There's so much opportunity. I think I still would have been okay in the vacation industry, but not in multifamily and not in hospitality, say the hotel side. I needed what they had already accomplished at that point to accomplish what I was envisioning. And fortunately, majority of our vision was aligned, and pretty good guys too, so that was always a good part. Yeah. That's always a key thing. I'm sure you're like me, you got to have integrity first. If that's not there, then forget it.
100%.
But good guys. And then it did take us a couple months because we're both, a bunch of strong alphas in the room trying to figure out how to get our agreement done. And we finally got that across the goal line and then got after it. And I think I started April 4th. I had to stay on at Inhabit to close out one more acquisition. It was a group called Anyone Home. So I had led, our structured or set up a couple acquisitions, but got that across the goal line. And then I joined formally, officially with OK to Charge on April 4th, but we start out on vacation and I just hit the ground running. I was at the show. I was like, let's get live res set up. Let's get owner res. Let's get guesty track. Mm-hmm. I just took off the competitive hat and let's go because I knew that the secret sauce would be getting that dominant position land grab of, I don't want anyone else to think about another charging solution except for ours. And the best way to do that is get these property management system integrations, because no one else is going to think about it like that in vacation. And these guys were already thinking that way. So that was a great first step, is to get that integrated and going. And the reason that is important is so that the right person is charging at the right time. It's when you have a couple Teslas in town, and that's all well and good. There's just a couple. When you have 30, 40, 50, 100 Teslas and they find out who has the vacation home with the charger, you're going to become popular. People are going to stop in. They're going to charge in your lot, whether you like it or not. And that, or they're staying. We had a client that just bought our chargers at the property in Florida. Their electric bill went up $300. Just what happened? Well, this was even a Tesla charger just going to normal outlet. It was just all day, full day, just drawing down a charge. That's expensive. You got to recover those costs. You don't give free gasoline at your vacation property. So the mindset is there. So that was step one. And now what we're doing is expanding into, we're continuing to focus on vacation, and it's pretty exciting. You stopped by our balcony. That's where you and I chatted.
Yeah. Gosh, that was so cool. That was so cool. Like, I was like, man, it's a little hidden, right? Like, yeah, I had to go through like two doorways to get to you from the Be Home 24/7 booth. But still, like, getting out there, I was like, this is nice. Like, it was great weather, great view. And then you had like the furniture set up, the snacks. Yeah. Like, it was slick. And I was like, all right, I'm glad Lino's taking me out here. Like, this was refreshing, especially because, as we all do at conferences, have one or too many drinks the night before, and you're struggling, and you're in this room with a lot of people, and you're like already hungover. But coming outside, I was like, oh, this is refreshing. It was a great like change into the day, especially really good location.
Love it. Spot. Well, that it's a perfect example of kind of the entrepreneurial mindset, right? We were too late to get a booth at Verma International, and if you're not at Verma International, I mean, good luck to you.
You're not part of the conversation.
And I was begging, Scott Leggett, calling everybody I could. How can I get in, you know, Miller, everybody, what can I do? And then finally they said, hey, you know, we kind of got this balcony thing. It was pretty spendy. And the, what do you want to do with it? I said, oh, how about we create a recharge zone or something? I mean, it fits obviously. And then, I mean, it was really a blank space. So we had Michelle Beal and the team. We all got together. We put together the furniture, got that all set up. I mean, it was exciting and get that rocking and rolling. And then put up, shipped a bunch of chargers and set them up. But to have a balcony, and for those listeners that weren't there, it's a balcony at Caesar's Palace. We're overlooking called the Pool of the Gods. Just beautiful, you know. And the and your point, the weather. We're kind of worried if it's 90 degrees, not going to be fun. So we had a lot of a lot of nice things went our way that day.
No, it was great. And so you guys are getting in front of the right people. And I loved, because during that conversation, this is one of my favorite parts of the podcast, by the way. Like, I love getting to share these behind the scenes stories with the listeners, because it's not like me just interviewing you. It's like you and I have gotten to know each other a little bit since October. And in that conversation, it was really cool because you were talking about the last mile. You're like, all right, there's this thing called the last mile that I think a lot of, in the EV world, people forget. So when someone's staying in a vacation rental, they are driving, they're charging along the way, whether it's 350 miles, 100 miles, 50 miles, whatever. They're using their charge. They're charging at stops along the way. But then they get to the vacation home, and then they have to drive maybe 3 or 4, maybe 10 minutes away to the next grocery store that's got a EV center, basically. And then they have to sit there while everyone else is at the vacation home unpacking and getting set up and picking out the bedrooms and, you know, doing all the stuff, maybe barbecuing right away. And you're just sitting there like with your hand, you know, just twiddling your thumbs, kind of like, all right, just got to charge this freaking car for 20, 30 minutes and then go back. So kind of tell us like your guys' mission.
There's a DC fast charger, which most places don't. Most vacation areas do not. Otherwise, you're getting some level 2 charger like what we put in, and you're sitting, you know, you'll leave your car at a Walmart or something overnight, you know?
Yeah.
Terrible.
Which is not safe. It could, you know, obviously there could be break-ins and all sorts of stuff that happen with that. Yeah. So kind of tell me your guys' mission with OK to Charge and what you guys are really aiming to do. Not only vacation rentals, but obviously it's going to lead into multifamily, into hotels, you know, the whole sphere of hospitality.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. So we, that last mile concept is critical. It's wherever people park their car and overnight, that's where they expect to charge their cars. You back in the day with internet, you go to internet cafes and get access, download your email or something else. Having an EV charger where you park is going to be just as prevalent as having internet where you live. It'll be just that. It'll be no expectation, but 2020, 2035, you can't even have gas cars sold in California and other countries. 2025, which is right on the door, Hertz is going to have 25% of their cars be electric. Hertz drivers are going to your vacation properties and they want to charge their car. They don't want to drop it off. And there you go.
I'm a gold member with Hertz. So heck yeah, I'll be.
There we go. Yeah, you're like, okay, you get the Tesla 3. You're like, sweet, I got a Tesla 3. I use my AC, I use my heaters and everything else. And now I'm at a third of the charge left. And what do I do? And I don't know where anything's close. No, it's going to ruin your vacation. So you have to have that. And what's going to happen as well? You know, Brooke just posted this from Ventry this morning. He went from 4,000 properties he's competing with to 4 because he had a charger. And Airbnb, in their wisdom, in their San Francisco base, they're thinking about this. EV is one of the dropdowns, right?
Yep.
So that's key. Booking.com's there. Idris Elba's on a commercial, which I forwarded to the Vrbo team, by the way. I was like, hey, guys, come on. You know, they need to have that in the dropdown. They'll get that. Tim and the team will have that soon. But it's in the amenities. So that's already amenities section. And then we talked to Beyond, and they ran an analysis, and they were able to verify that by having an EV charger in the U.S., 12.8% uplift on your ADR just by having an EV charger. You know, and that's not us. That's Beyond saying that. So all the data points. And then where we're going next, we're building reservations for multifamily, idle fees so that you can have, and also resorts. So we're at Snowshoe. We're at another Costco property in Mexico. That's doing great. You know, people are pulling in, charging up their car. We have a different model for that where they pay by the kilowatt hour versus paying by the day, like a spot day and stay. And then on the multifamily, in addition, we have idle fees. So if someone parks their car, charges it, leaves it too long, hey, these things need to churn. So get your car. We send them a text message and move on. And then something big we're doing in single family is time of use. And this is where like the next level. So first off, just getting the car charged. But time of use is where the electrical grid is time of day. If it's between 4 and 8 p.m., maybe that's peak hours. It's going to cost you 30 cents a kilowatt hour. But maybe after midnight, it's 2 cents a kilowatt hour. So we can do is in our software, and we already have this live, you can actually charge trickle, trickle, trickle. Comes midnight, boom. Charge up your car where it's the cost is least effective. And now you're doing something right for the grid. It's saving you money. All these great things. And you do it while you sleep once again. So it's critical.
Dynamic pricing for EV charging is what it sounds
like. You got it. Yeah. You got it. Yeah. And that's just the beginning, you know? So it's, and I'm throwing my electrical engineer hat and I can geek out. There's something called vehicle to grid. You've probably seen this with the Ford Lightning where they can power the house and Porsche Taycan and all the cars are going to have this. Chargers will have it here in the next year or so. But that's where the battery of your car becomes part of your grid for your home. So if you have a solar panel or something else, you're going to charge up your car and then your car will be able to push power back in your house. And now you're going to have all these hand shaking back and forth. So it's the next 5 years is going to be really exciting.
Yeah, it's crazy. This like, there's just so much that goes into like, I always talk about anticipation of the guest needs, right? We're always talking about how do we anticipate what the guests are going to need, and how do you stick out above the competition? And as you kind of showed, you know, Airbnb is creating this like category search vehicle where it's really not like people aren't booking their stays by the destination itself. Like, oh, I want to stay in North Carolina. They're actually staying by a criteria of like, one, is this property Instagrammable? Am I going to be able to show this off to my friends? And is it a cool experience? Right. So then also, is it checking off the wow factors of, you know, the amenities, the hot tub, the EV charging, the simple like check-in instructions, like which should be basic now, like that should be like anyone thinking about getting on Airbnb or short-term rentals. You have to have a smart lock. Like it's just no questions asked. So all the stuff. And I think, you know, the EV charging one, as much as there is hype around Tesla and Rivian and all these other kind of companies that are going all electric, our space is always like hospitality in general, like hotels, multifamily. We're always kind of behind the eight ball when it comes to innovation in the overall consumer world. So to see that this is like, I don't know, before meeting you and before getting introduced and kind of hearing more of the story from Lino and Travis and all this, you know, in my head, I wasn't even thinking of EV as being a big thing.
No.
Because I don't drive EV cars. I don't have a car here in Denver, but, you know, just not part of my life. But then hearing like, okay, like from a business standpoint, from a management company, from an owner, from, you know, the industry as a whole, like, okay, 12.5% increase in ADR. Like that's nice. That's nice, especially in this economy. Like you know, that's real. That's real money in your pocket. And thinking of like, I always mess up the word ancillary revenue, but like in-stay revenue, right? Like being able to have another source that you're not having to split with the owner. You know, that could be another big perk. So getting like, I know we only covered okay to charge like right at the end of this podcast, but
I'm doing a terrible job as CEO.
No, it's great. I think your story leading up to all this, like it helps. I think, you know, anyone who's listening right now, if you've gotten to this point, we're at an hour and 15 minutes as we're recording, is like, okay, you know, if you got to this point, then you understand why this makes sense. Cause like you said earlier in the episode, right time with the right people doing the right thing. I think that's a huge piece. If this happened 2 years ago, do you think the success would have been there? Maybe not. It could. Yeah. So
it wasn't the demand. You know, it's I don't know, it's like having the iPhone too soon and not enough people, you know, were interested in it. Or maybe the iPhone created the man. Bad analogy. Yeah. But yeah, there were not enough electric cars in the road. And now it's reached that tipping point. There's actually in the innovator's dilemma, you look at from the bleeding edge, now there's kind of early adopters. We've moved into the early adopters phase. So once you get 5% penetration of any product, that's when you're off of the bleeding edge. So now we've surpassed that in the US. Other countries are already there. And that's the other part. Norway just crossed the point where you have more miles driven electric than gas in Norway. Wow. And you see different countries that are well ahead of the US and we're catching up. So there's validity on multiple fronts, and then you see the tsunami of opportunity coming. So that's where we're getting ahead of it. And then kind of the most important thing, though, and you mentioned, it's that consumer experience. It has to be the easy button. And if there's anything I learned, whether it was in multifamily or in vacation, property managers do not need one more thing to do. You know, it has to be simple, 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 simple. You know, that's why we integrate. Everything flows through. We send the email. We collect the money. We turn it on for them. Just no more work for you. It's got to keep it that way.
So to help wrap up this episode, because I know, I don't know if you have another meeting or anything, but for you guys in this team, what's next? What does 2023 look like for you as CEO, as a company? Is it more integrations? Is it starting to move into multifamily? What's your guys' your big push?
Yeah. Number one thing still is growth in the vacation sector. This was our coming out party this year. Yeah. You know, everyone should kind of know about us. Now it's, here's the numbers. Here's the value prop. Let's not just get, you know, 10 chargers in Costco. Let's get 100 or 400. Let's not get the same thing. iTrip, because you name it, you know, we'll get there. And everyone in between, you know, getting just chargers out there and getting the education for as many people as needed. But yes, expanding in the multifamily, we have some trials going right now, going outstanding. And then also hospitality and hotels. We're going to announce here shortly, I'm probably ahead of myself, but Oracle Hospitality, it's Opera. So we're going to be announcing that here shortly. And having some very strategic conversations with some very large hotel players. And as you can imagine, you pull up to a hotel, if I'm integrated with their property management system, I say, okay, Will is staying at this hotel, you know, Marriott, and he's already approved. And otherwise it's pretty popular parking lot for chargers. And so now we're going to say, no, only guests of this property. No one else can do that. We're the only ones that can. So we're going to be so far ahead of the curve, and we're just going to, you know, grow in that space. So it's going to be hotels, multifamily, but solidify ourselves in vacation as well.
I love it. I love it. Yeah. Super exciting. As a Marriott Bonvoy member myself, I can't wait for when I'm renting my Hertz car, rental car, to go plug it in. And
I am not going to rest until that. I was literally, what you described is literally a conversation I had yesterday. I was saying, you need to have your Bonvoy app. You look at it. There's your EV charging. You click on it. Yep, I'm charged. Just like you open your door automatically. You know, just whoever sold them those locks, congratulations, way to go. I want to be the guy that sells them the EV chargers. You know, put your Bonvoy app, go inside. You know, whether that goes extra charge or onto your folio, that's up for a process. But I'm going to make it happen.
I love it. I'm going to hold you to it. I'm going to hold you to it, though. Like, we're going to save this clip, and we're going to come back in a year and be like, all right, did you make it happen? I love it. Well, Eric, I seriously loved this conversation. This is the best way to start my mornings. Hopping into a podcast and chatting with smart people like you and just hearing your story. It's really inspiring. And I just want to ask for anyone who's listening right now, what if you had one link to put in the show notes and to have them follow, whether it's okaytocharge.com or your LinkedIn or whatever, or it could be anything that's inspired you in the past. If you had one link to send them, what would it be?
Oh, just one link.
Obviously include everything, but
follow me on LinkedIn and then connect with LinkedIn Eric Broughton. Follow, and then of course follow Okay to Charge. My favorite book and a person that I just really value and have a lot of my mind share as far as how I manage is Ray Dalio. And the book is called Principles. And I think it just is a brilliant way, whether it's this concept of radical transparency for your teams, or, you know, giving validity to everyone has great ideas, but the person at the table that has the most validity to their idea, they get a weighting to that. So there's just a lot of concepts that I would highly recommend, the book Principles by Ray Dalio.
I love it. I love it. Yeah. Well, again, thank you so much, Eric, for being on the show today. And for all of you Slick Talkers who are watching, listening, all the above, make sure you like and subscribe to everything Okay to Charge, Eric Broughton, you name it, anything that we covered in this episode, make sure you're showing the love, because there's quite a few of you out there that do tune into the show. So we appreciate every single one of you, and we'll see you all again next week. Thank you so much for listening, and thank you to our show partners for making Slick Talk, the hospitality podcast, possible. We hope you enjoyed the show, and we would love to connect with you outside of the podcast.
So you can follow us on all of our social media channels for daily hospitality content, or find us on slicktalkthepodcast.com. And don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe so you never miss an episode. I'm your host, Will Slickers, and we will see you guys all again next week.